Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to talk to you about RotoBaller.com, proud sponsor of the show. Do my written content over at RotoBaller.com, and this podcast is a part of the RotoBaller Radio Network. So I want to let you know that football season quickly approaching with you guys. Win big in 2021 with RotoBaller.com's NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? RotoBaller's NFL Premium Pass and Draft Kit include rankings, projections, and cheat sheets for all formats. Get exclusive draft articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chats. Join in on the winning and take 50% off any Premium Pass. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% discount. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 406. Going to recap some Tout Wars. And in order to do so, I have some guests on the show that were newbies in Tout Wars with me. And we were all newbies in a new league to top it off, a whole new format that made it even more entertaining to get our feet wet. First, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric. And my first guest, he gets the first call because he won the darn thing. You can find him on Twitter at AlexFast8. Alex, how are we doing, my friend?
Oh, great, you losers. I'm sorry. I don't know why I wanted to say it. I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you. Thank you for gracing us with it. Yeah.
I really didn't know if I was going to we were going to be able to get you locked in between ESPN and everything else. I thought we were like, it's going to be tough.
You're talking to the other guy who works for CBS, staying up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
But like, I barely count.
Speaking of that other voice you're hearing, or if you're watching it on YouTube, you can find him on Twitter at C Towers CBS from CBS Sports. Chris Towers, how we doing, man?
Good. We were just talking about how weird my schedule is these days with football. I wake up at 11 or noon most days and stay up writing until 4 or 3 in the morning. So, you know, just got my morning coffee in at 4 in the afternoon, you know?
Oh, God. I love it. Early college, I do the night shift unloading trucks at a Target. So I kind of have a weird schedule feel for you. I know how it can be. Wake up in the afternoon to start your day. It's always a little different.
I used to work at Crif Dogs, Chris, and I don't know if I still have it in Brooklyn, but I used to get off at like 4:30 in the morning because we used to close at 4 a.m. and it sucked.
Yeah, between the Miami Herald where I started and then my first like 4 years at CBS, I spent about 5 years doing this shift, and now I'm backsliding a little bit when it comes to my sleeping patterns, but it's okay.
Hey, we're young, right? You only live once, but at least we think we're young. But Tout Wars. First off, the season's over. Congratulations, Alex. You basically, I can't remember too far back, but it feels like you went wire to wire. So that was
you overtook me in like week 7 or something. Yeah. I think you pretty much held on the whole time.
You were the leader I was chasing for quite some time. At one point, I was in second the entire way until I passed Chris, and then I was in first from then on. But it was all chasing Chris up until like week 12 or 13.
Okay, well, let's have some fun discussing how that happened then, because for those that didn't know, we were in a 12-team roto format, but instead of wins, it was innings pitched. And instead of saves, it was saves holds. So a little bit different format there. Typical Tout Wars, you have OBP as well. So it's not an average league. So there's a little different theory kind of compared to your normal NFBCs and all those things that most podcasts kind of focus around. So Alex, we'll start with you. How did you attack this to be able to win the darn thing, basically? Like, what was your like what worked for you? You think that was different from a normal league?
It's
a very broad question. It's a wide open.
No. It's funny because I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I was talking with Nick about this on the Pitchless podcast, and just looking at my draft, and like my first three picks were like Mookie Betts, Yu Darvish, and Clayton Kershaw, and like that's not a championship team. You know what I mean? Like Mookie Betts was fine. He didn't really have the year people thought he would. Yu Darvish was not. Clayton Kershaw was not. So for me, it was just like kind of getting lucky at the end of drafts. I mean, I got Jorge Soler really late, and that didn't work out for maybe 60% of the season. But then Jesse Winker, Sandy Alcantara, those were the guys that really helped me get my start. But I think it was, you know, guys like Cedric Mullins, who I picked up off the waiver wire in the second week, that's the only benefit of the Orioles fandom, really, is being like, hey, maybe he doesn't suck as much as people think he sucks. Maybe this is for real. But I think, you know, coming into it, all I really wanted to do is just come out with a well-balanced team. I know every team's going to have holes, regardless of the draft that you have. They're just going to have holes. I wanted to try and have holes that I think I could theoretically plug up. I didn't want to go too heavy on home runs and be like, well, I'm really going to have to worry about average, or go too heavy on innings pitched and be like, well, I really need to make sure I have my ratios. I wanted to just be as even keeled as possible. You know, if I was a 6 out of 12 after my draft in all of the categories, that's exactly where I wanted to be.
Interesting. Chris, you talked about how you were leading early. What was it in your draft that kind of brought you to, like, what were you focused on draft day to push you ahead that quickly?
Yeah, a lot of it was, you know, really leaning into the changes in this format, especially on the pitching side, which was the much better side for me this season. You know, when you introduce innings pitched, obviously wins are a counting stat and they, you know, volume matters there. But when you're just talking about innings pitched, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, wins and strikeouts being two huge volume stats that you can really rack up. And so my focus there was try to get steady inning sources along with, you know, upside plays. Unfortunately, my, you know, two anchors of my pitching staff actually ended up being Shane Bieber and Zach Greinke. So they weren't really, great anchors, especially Bieber, who barely played what after. I mean, I think his injury probably coincided with me dropping out of first place.
That'll happen.
And so, you know, for the hitting side, it was really focusing on OBP. And so my first three were Freddie Freeman, Alex Bregman, and Aaron Judge. Two of those three worked out really well. And the thought process there was, if you're getting sluggers with high OBP, you should be able to get runs and RBI along with that. And for the most part, that did work out. But, you know, the issue for me really was just injuries ended up really, really killing me, which was true of a lot of people this season.
100% true. That got me big time. It was weird because there were certain weeks it's like, well, I can just keep adding to my unlimited IL. So this is fun. Let's just keep doing this. This is depressing now. For me, like, the biggest issue is my power department. I thought I was doing fine in that department, but when guys like Christian Walker that you get super late to be a corner infielder do absolutely nothing and help you, like, that's a big drag, and other players along that line. But I was like a mixed bag with both of you guys. Like, I did the Juan Soto first, OBP wise, like, awesome. But then I went like Giolito and Castillo. We know how well that worked out. So it was kind of a mixed bag there as well. So it was tough. It was very interesting because you're trying to, like you guys said, kind of focus on the new stats, but not overdo it with the new stats. So Chris, I'll throw this to you. You mentioned like the volume thing with the innings pitch should lead to the strikeouts. Let's talk saves holds in a minute. Like, obviously there's so many more guys doing that this year, so you can kind of pick and choose. Were you more receptive to just wait on that? Did you say you're going to play the wire? How did you approach the saves holds aspect to it? And you're muted.
Oh, where'd you? I can't hear you.
Chris is muted.
I do this a lot. I mute myself in the middle of podcasting. I forget. So I was telling my cat to get out of the way. I'm sorry.
No problem.
So yeah, my approach to saves and holds was to try to stream it. I think the first reliever I picked up was Trevor Rosenthal on the 17th. And Amir Garrett in the 22nd was my second one. I don't know if I actually had another true reliever. And so my approach was, you know, try to, you know, get the saves and holds on the waiver wire because there are so many players getting them. I think the problem with that, and this is a problem when you're talking about holds leagues, you know, I think there's a lot of, or saves plus holds leagues, especially, I think there's a lot of like, well, it's easier to find because there are so many more players getting them. And that's true, but players don't get that many holds. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of holds collectively in Major League Baseball. A team could get three or four holds in one game. But the leaders, I don't know who the leader was this season, but the leaders usually are right around 30 to 35, maybe a little lower. And so finding guys who can consistently get that, it's a lot harder to just like stick them in. It's not like you can look at, you know, a closer goes down, his backup comes in, and you can say, well, I think he can get two to three saves this week. Holds are really a lot more random. And so that ended up hurting me, I think. And if I was going to do it again, I actually do think I might focus more on actual closers moving forward.
That's a good point, because I was just looking at the draft results, and I know I grabbed Iglesias in like round 11, but I kind of waited till the end. Obviously, he was great, but you are kind of piecing it together, like you said, and hoping, because even the other part is, you know, you might stream your guys and that week they don't get a chance, and then you drop them and they go get three chances. And it's like streaming for steals or homers. It's the same kind of conundrum where, like you're saying, if you go get a closer, well, he's going to be locked into probably a couple chances a week more often than not. We'll see how that works. Yeah, and he'll get holds too. True. So, Alex, how did you go about the saves hold situation? Because I know it was different. We kind of talked about it on the first time.
Yeah, I'm looking. You know, I'm looking over here at our draft and where I went, and you know, I wanted to at least try kind of the methodology that I'd written about for the past 2 years, which was like try and go with a quote unquote sure thing earlier than I would have preferred, and then fill the back end with things. And I mean, my first relief pick was in the sixth, which is pretty early for me. It was the second reliever off the board, I believe, in Liam Hendricks, and that worked out well. But then I got to the point in the 14th round where I was feeling good about the construction of my team. The only thing that I was lacking on was saves and holds, and I didn't feel comfortable with it. So I went with Nick Anderson. That clearly didn't go well. So I was already kind of in a hole there, and then filled out the back end. Chris Martin, I went with later on in the 22nd. He ended up getting hurt. I ended up getting Michael Lorenzen because I thought that he was going to be converted into a starter, who actually ended up being one of the more valuable holds guys. I don't know about more valuable. In the second half, he was more valuable in terms of holds before taking a risk on Emmanuel Classe, who ended up being one of my better relievers because of what happened with James Karinchak. For me, it's about looking at the data and trying to figure out whose bullpen sucks and who's more likely than not going to get those opportunities. By the end of it, for a lot of teams, even with good relievers, to be honest, it was clear what the structure was. So, for example, in Cincinnati, Sims and Lorenzen were going to get a hold and save opportunity, and then Michael Givens was going to get the save. And I believed in Lorenzen's upside just as a pitcher that he was going to be able to sustain those things. I knew that it's kind of a fool's errand after Nick Anderson to kind of get any Ray, because on any given day, Chris already talked very aptly about the wild usage. You throw that into Tampa Bay and it's even crazier, right? It's just absolutely bananas. And again, to prove exactly what Chris was saying, 32 holds led the year, 32 holds. And that was Blake Treinen. He had the most holds in baseball this year. A lot of these names are out there. The top 10 holds leaders are Treinen, Luke Jackson, Tyler Rogers, Genesis Cabrera, Tyler Matzik, Giovanni Gallegos, AJ Minter, Devin Williams, Brad Boxberger, everyone's favorite, of course. Yep. And then a big tie for 10th place. It's one thing to be like, oh, well, then I can get it off the wire. But then it's another to just not know when those are going to come. I think personally, it's I don't mind that as much because since it's a roto, you're just going to have a week where you got five and then a week where you get none. But yeah, I think I was happy that I was able to have that fence post early on a team that I knew they were going to stick with him. Even with Craig Kimbrell came, I was like, I don't think they're going to change out Liam Hendricks going into the ninth. It was nice to have that one fence post.
Yeah, and then Kimbrell could still get you a bunch of holds. So that works out well in that format. It wasn't like a killer to you. Alex, I know you were tweeting out about it today. You do a lot of work the last few years about the closing situation, the landscape that's always changing, and the different guys. Obviously, that can parlay into the holds conversation we're having as well, because that'll teeter back and forth there. Do you see any, like I guess, patterns where you can almost not get the fence post because you see how many guys are getting saves chances, which they'll also probably get holds? Like Tyler Rogers got 13 saves, but also was one of the top holds guys. Do you see like a pattern maybe, or is it way too early to kind of get a gauge on that?
It's funny that you say that because I literally just pulled that data today and was taking a look at that. But like, people have already, 205 or 205 different people got at least one save this year, which is a career high. And I double that. Like there are certain people who got saves for two teams. I double count them because it's more about utilization, right? Like it proves the point that saves are being more evenly distributed. If you go down to Tampa, you're going to see that it's how many did they different relievers did they use? It was what, 11? And there could be more actually that I haven't accounted for yet. However, go look at Arizona. I'm kind of looking at this live as we're doing this. Miami, three guys, Dylan Floro, Anthony Bender, Yimi Garcia. Okay. Arizona. No, that's a bad example. Who was I just looking at? There's some other teams where it's like, oh, they just used three guys really over and over again. Colorado. I mean, I don't know if I can ever really recommend anyone's like, yeah, go get Daniel Bard. He's really going to be a benefit to your team. But I do think it is good to year over year look at who's really spreading these out super thin. Oakland really doesn't do it a lot. They usually end up sticking with a guy. That guy changes a lot year over year. I believe last year was the first time they had a back-to-back saves leader since Grant Balfour. But
wow, there's a name.
Pittsburgh too, although they didn't really get many. This is all rambly. What did I notice? I noticed that it's plateauing a little bit. Well, we're starting to see a little bit more consistency.
Well, the good thing is you mentioned like the teams with like three guys. Well, at least if you're doing saves holds, you can focus more on that team per se than the team that spreads it out everywhere and give you more consistency. So you don't have to maybe get the top guy, but go get the third guy. Chris, so we don't need to keep talking pitching, but those are two of the new stats. So it kind of made it more the conversation starter. With the innings pitched, obviously guys like Robbie Ray throws 190 plus innings this year, all these different things. Lance Lynn's usually a horse, but then he gets hurt. So it's tough to always be dead on with what you're looking at. Do you have any concerns going into that? I know it's super early, a lot of speculation, but going into the next year, because the concern this year was workload based off a 60 game season, but now we got a full season after a 60 game. So who knows, are you going to focus more on this year's stats or kind of take a wait and see approach is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. It's so hard with workload. I mean, five guys hit 200 innings this season. Seven got to 190, which even when you know that that's the case, it's still stunning to actually see that in action. And I don't know whether that's, you know, you can put the toothpaste back in the tube in so many words in that regard. I don't know how many teams are going to be willing to get a lot of their starters back up to 180, 190 innings when you're talking about, like, say you have a guy who debuted in 2019, probably didn't throw that many innings, didn't throw many innings in 2020, obviously. Very few guys really did a workhorse role in 2021. So all of a sudden now you're looking at potentially a whole generation of starting pitchers who haven't done the 180 inning season, let alone the 200 inning season. So I think the guys who have proven they can do it, the handful who have, I think you can probably rely on them moving forward. Beyond that, I think inning pitched is going to be even more scarce moving forward. And so when you're talking about how to approach that for this season, one thing you don't really see anymore is mediocre innings eaters. You know, teams aren't going to let a guy who's not good pitch into the seventh inning regularly.
True.
I mean, I guess Kyle Hendricks and Aaron Nola would be kind of the exceptions this season. Both of them got to 180 with an ERA over 4.5, but they're also really good. You know, they had bad seasons, but they're good pitchers. So when you're talking about a league with innings pitched as a category, I almost think that's going to end up being, if you target innings pitched, the same way if you target home runs, you generally get RBI, you know, and runs. I think it's going to be the case where if you target innings pitched, you're probably going to do pretty well in the other starting pitching categories, just because the guys who pitch a lot of innings are going to be the guys who are good. There really aren't that many guys who pitch deep. I mean, you look at it and like the top 30 in innings pitched this season, you've got like five or six guys who had an ERA over 4, maybe 7. It's kind of wild, which to me says we're going to continue to see a gap between the haves and have-nots at starting pitcher in that regard.
Which will make it much more interesting come draft day, because that kind of leads me to my potentially last question on starting pitching or pitching in general is, with that idea of there's the haves, the have-nots, maybe some guys that have proven they can do it, still making it tough to 100% go in on certain guys, are you going to be super focused on getting these guys early per se, or are you going to let the draft come to you and still keep it balanced and just kind of go for the best options at the time? We'll go with you first, Chris.
Yeah, I've never really, this is a big philosophical difference between Scott White and I on the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast, because he's really heavy on starting pitching, and I generally think unless you can get one or two of like the top tier guys, starting pitching generally tends to be a pretty horrible investment throughout the draft. I mean, if you look historically, like outside of the first three, maybe four rounds, the hit rate on starting pitchers in round 5, 6, 7 and 10 through 13 really isn't all that different. And so I think what you probably want to do, and it's similar to the concept of the RB dead zone in fantasy football, where we push guys at this scarce position up because we think they can get the innings or we think they can make the leap. And, you know, maybe the answer is probably more of that anchor approach, you know, not necessarily like a zero SP approach, but, you know, if we call it RB, you know, hero RB in football, maybe hero SP. You get that one anchor guy, and you know, after that, try to kind of fill in the gaps and take what the draft gives you. I'd be surprised if we see too many round one SPs this year, though, or next year.
Yeah, it will be interesting, because I know it's one of the topics people do in early drafts or early mocks. It's some guys are, but there's a lot more dropping, at least to the back end of the round one compared to early on. So it is different, but it seems like we have this discussion every offseason, and then come like March, it's like, okay, well, we got to start pushing again. And Alex,
I do want to add one other thing with this topic, though, is that we're not that good at projecting workload. Yes. I mean, I was off Walker Buehler this season because I didn't think he was going to have the workload. I thought they were going to treat him with kid gloves. Instead, he led the majors in quality starts, I believe. He went 6 innings in almost every start. He was 207.2, number 2 in the majors. But you also had Robbie Ray, Kevin Gausman, Frankie Montas, Julio Urias, Charlie Morton, Nathan Eovaldi, all in the top 12 in innings pitched this season. I don't think anybody would have predicted any of those guys being among the league leaders. And so that's the hard thing, is, you know, who's actually going to be that guy is really tough to predict.
Yeah, that's one thing I've had that discussion with a lot of people, because Phil Dussault is predicted it out pretty well, and I'd love to know how the heck he figured that out, because it's amazing. But it obviously
if worked. Anybody could,
it'd be fun.
You know, well, and if anybody else could, you know, they'd be as successful as him. So
yeah, no doubt about it. Alex, I'll feed that to you. Are you kind of on the same vein of maybe getting a top guy, or are you going heavy pitching? Are you going to wait? How do you think you'll look at it because of that innings pitched idea?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was talking about this a little bit earlier with someone else today about, like, I think one of the things that makes
projecting innings so difficult is the different approaches that organizations are going to take with their starting pitchers and their workload, right? And the Dodgers are a perfect example. Like you said, incredibly shocking that Walker Buehler was second in innings pitched this year. Very shocking that Julio Urias was, I think, through 180.
I was shocked by him the most. He really shocked me.
Yeah, 100%. But here's why that may have happened. They lost Dustin May. Yep. They lost Clayton Kershaw. They had David Price trying to pitch. They lost Tony Gonsolin. They lost Trevor Bauer. I don't think that that is an organization that had the depth that they are used to having, because even when they would lose guys like that in the past, they would still find like Josiah Gray, who still threw plenty of innings for them this year before getting traded to the Nationals. And then they, of course, acquired Scherzer. But like that to me is why I think they did end up giving the ball to those guys so frequently. Do we see that happen again next year? There's just no way of really knowing. You know, I feel like every year I look at past drafts and I see some of the things that people were able to succeed with. Kevin Gausman was in the 13th round to Al Melchior. Zach Wheeler was in the 9th round. Brandon Woodruff was in the 5th round. Chris, you took Corbin Burns in the 6th round.
Wow.
Which was a bit of a reach at the time.
Yeah.
100%.
It was like February 1st or something like that when we drafted. A lot of this was like super early. Yeah, definitely.
But even that, Sean Manaea, round 22. Robbie Ray, round 24. I mean, these are Frankie Montas, 18. Huh?
Where'd Sandy Alcantara go?
I took Sandy Alcantara in the 12th.
Okay.
In the 12th round. And it's going to happen every year. And I know Nick Pollock always makes a point of it, too. Like, there are guys on this list who weren't even drafted. Logan Webb, I picked up the first week and dropped because he was ineffective before he was sent back down to the minors, and he kind of figured things out a little bit more. But I'm looking at some of the other guys who ended the year kind of tops in ERA, and there were plenty of dudes who, I'm looking at the wrong season because I looked at Patrick Corbin and I was like, either I have a concussion or something is really, really wrong here. But there's just always going to be plenty of those guys who are surprises. Anthony Discofani, like top 15 in ERA. Like there are just guys Chris Flexen. People weren't, it was early. I think maybe if we drafted in March, that would have changed. Dylan Cease, Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson was top 25 in ERA this year. So there are plenty of people that I think you can kind of fix that squad with off the wire. So maybe I would say take one early and then just focus on offense.
Speaking of the wire, Chris, how did you think this wire was potentially different? Because I have my thoughts, but I want to get your guys' first. How do you think that the FAB like waiver wire was different in this league compared to other leagues?
I felt like even with unlimited IL spots, there were still a lot of situations where surprisingly valuable guys were cut in this league. But I think the biggest problem, and I sort of struggle with playing the waiver wire in general, just because I tend to have a little bit too much take lock, and I probably need to play fantasy baseball more like I play fantasy football. Although then you end up dropping really valuable guys. So it's always a tough balance to strike there, but, I think in general, like in this league, you could have been really successful playing the waiver wire with saves and holds, but you had to be really, really aggressive. And like we talked about, it was pretty unpredictable. As far as how it differed from other leagues, I don't really know. I haven't thought that deeply about that one yet.
You have any thoughts on the waiver wire in this league, Alex?
I think it, like any other league, it started out really, really hot. And then I don't want to say it waned because there were still a lot of competitive bids coming into the end. And I didn't really notice anyone who just like fully gave up, which, of course, that's to be expected. It's an industry league and there's a lot of eyes on it for sure. But I think at the beginning, as people were sussing things out, like there were a lot of heavy bids. And then there were some kind of surprising drops. I was able to pick up Zach Gallen in the middle of the season. And granted, that didn't necessarily work out great. So hindsight's 20/20. But at the time, that was like a pretty valuable arm to pick up. I don't think overall. I guess maybe it's because we're spoiled and we probably play a majority of our leagues with people who are really passionate about fantasy baseball. I didn't notice too much of a difference in the waiver, and that's not an indictment on the industry league so much as it is great that we have friends who take this as seriously as we do.
Yeah, in that respect, I completely agree. You hit on what my biggest surprise to me was, is how aggressive it was on certain players. Like, there were some bids, especially early on, I'm like, whoa. I didn't even think it would be close to that kind of numbers. And even throughout the year, be certain ones. And I think a lot of that is, you hear a lot of these guys talk about that have been in these industry leagues forever. They know their competitors. It's like, I almost want to go back and look at some of these guys like Ray Flowers and Al Melker. They put bids out I just didn't even see coming. I'm like, whoa, that was quite surprising to me. Where maybe, you know, play with them for a few years, you'll see these things. And that'll make more sense. You can kind of, because there's guys, players you really wanted to get that you couldn't get. The other part of it that I wanted to ask you guys about, different than any other league I've been a part of, when you add someone, you have to play them that week.
Yeah.
So streaming changes everything. I think that's one reason why, Chris, there were more available players on the wire, because it's like, I want this guy 2 weeks from now, but I don't want him now. And it's like, okay, this, now you got to pay more for him when you want him thing, which makes it really challenging. Or like when these young pitchers come up, it's like, I want to speculate, but if he's not going to pitch this week, I need innings. Like, this stinks.
Or do I want it? Like, if, you know, I think it was, I'm blanking on the Blue Jays rookie pitcher who came up.
Alek Manoah.
Yeah. I think his first start was against the Yankees, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Do I want to take that chance?
And so it's like, he was good, I think, in that first start, but it's like, man, do you really want to add him in that first start when you haven't seen him? You don't know how he's going to react. One thing that does bring to mind that I did want to bring up was, in this league, a situation I found myself in was, when you add someone, you have to start them. It limits your flexibility also. And so I found a lot of situations where there were weeks where I just couldn't bench a injured player because I didn't have an extra outfielder, and I had to start the guy that I picked up because I didn't get the outfielder that I put the bid in for. And so, that having more flexibility with my roster and having more multi-eligible guys would have been really nice, especially when like Alex Bregman went down and I lost his eligibility. And so that was something that really stuck out to me in this league, where I found myself held back a lot of times by having not enough players to play multiple spots and being forced into playing the guys that I added.
That's a good point. Very good point. What, you got any thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Dalton Varsho like saved my season a bunch. You know what I mean? Like, being able to have Dalton Varsho and be like, okay, you're a catcher this week. All right. Or even I like Pavin Smith. Like, at one point he played like every position in baseball, and it was like, he was serviceable enough and high up in the order enough that I was able to just kind of like plug him in. But it was a challenge. It definitely had me, you know, I had to think like, yeah, this guy is good, but like, do I want this in for a week? Do I want a week of this production? So it definitely activated a part of my brain that hasn't been activated for fantasy baseball.
Yeah, that was probably one of the more challenging aspects to the entire league, was going, okay, I got to play this guy. Because like you mentioned Manoah, even think of Shane Baz, Joe Ryan, all these guys. And well, they might start this week. Well, we don't know if they're going to start this week. And it was just like, oh man, this is troublesome. Obviously, you could do the midweek changes with your, you know, if guy goes on the IL, all these kind of things. But that was nice if you remember to do it. There's weeks I forget to do it, check it on Saturday, and I go, oh, I could have done that 4 days ago. Sweet. That's fun. Just because I'm not used to it. My brain's not functioning to do those kind of moves. Chris, anything else that really stood out to you in this league compared to, like, you thought you've been in other industry leagues, I'm assuming, and everything like that. But what, anything else stand out to you in this league? Because it's as a kind of guinea pig league, but obviously it's coming back next year, it sounds like.
It was mostly just trying to deal with three new leagues and seeing how people reacted to that, or three new categories and seeing how people reacted to that. I don't think I had ever, obviously I've played in an OBP and a saves plus hold league, but I don't think I had ever played with innings instead of wins. And, you know, seeing how people reacted to that, seeing the way it impacted the kind of pitchers you were able to use, you know, what was really interesting for me. And then, as I think one of the things you probably wanted to talk about a little later, but I'll just bring it up now, is just like the innings versus wins versus quality starts dichotomy and you know, people have strong opinions about that. Having played this league, I will say I don't really have any opinion on it either way. I think innings are the least random of those three options, but they're also, you know, not indicative of quality. Although, like I said, the correlation is becoming much stronger. And so maybe that is an argument in favor of innings pitched moving forward as a category. But, you know, the wins versus quality starts thing, like people get really heated about it and ban the win and use quality. And it's like, ultimately, it just comes down to what's more fun. Like, I had fun playing with innings pitched. I wouldn't mind using that moving forward. But I also don't hate wins because it's I'm not trying to perfectly replicate wins above replacement when I'm playing fantasy. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the single most valuable player has to be the single most valuable player in fantasy. The randomness is what it is, but there's a lot of randomness in quality starts too.
Definitely.
You know, if you go 5 2/3 of shutout innings, you don't get a quality start. So it's all ultimately arbitrary. I actually might prefer innings pitch though.
What are your thoughts on that, Alex?
As you were talking about it, you made a lot of really good points, and I think you actually pushed me towards innings pitch, but there's a back and forth to it. One, there is something, you know, we love complaining. We make a career out of it sometimes. And like,
it's a topic on a lot of shows.
Exactly. Like it can be fun, and it is a conversation starter when a terrible bullpen, you know, blows a win for a guy.
Oh yeah.
And there is no bigger, it sucks, but there's no bigger conversation starter, at least in my mind, in this category than how dare the manager pull him with 5 2/3 and 92 pitches. You know what I mean? Yep. The quality start leagues, that it's always that final out, that
especially when like he still gets the win later on.
Oh yeah. No, it's brutal. It's like, it's just brutal. So while I do respect the fact that there are certain foundations of the industry built upon those conversations, it's really nice to know that more often than not, innings is going to reflect that more accurately. If a guy is going 7, he's not ineffective, and I don't need to worry about a reliever messing up his win. Yeah. I don't need to worry about a manager pulling him at 5 2/3 and totally derailing the quality start. Yeah, it stinks to pull him at 5 2/3, but I still get those innings. There's nothing else that can be taken away.
You get the full value. It's not a binary.
100. Exactly. Well,
you get his performance. You don't have to worry about anything else. Like, you get.
Yeah, and so, you know, for me, like, ultimately, whatever you want to do with your league, just choose whatever's most fun to you and whatever you think will create the most challenge for your team. Like, if it's wins, if you guys like wins, do that. I don't care. Like there's the crusade against it, and I get it. They're stupid, but it's a game, you know? And so it's all about finding the way to win the game within the parameters that you've set up. And so there's a skill to having batting average instead of on base percentage, even if on base percentage is more valuable in real life and tells you more about a player's value. So, I think it's worth remembering that this is ultimately a game that we're playing.
Yes, it's supposed to be fun. That's one thing I always try to reiterate. Fantasy baseball is supposed to be fun. If it's not fun, do something different. I don't care if it's free, money, whatever. It's supposed to be fun.
I always think about the people who play, like, I found out that people who play Fortnite nowadays get mad at people who don't have, like, expensive skins. And, like, there's a name for them, like the people who play with just the base level stuff. And, like, that to me, just, it's the same thing. It's like, it's a game. I don't care what I look like. I'm still going to shoot you with a fake gun in this game. It doesn't matter if I'm not dressed like LeBron James doing it. Like, it doesn't matter. It cracks me up.
Yeah. I think those people are probably, I think that's like a psyop, and they actually work for Valve or whichever company.
Maybe runs, I think you're giving 8-year-olds too much credit there, though.
Some of those 8-year-olds are making more money than us guys. So
that's true.
But I'm glad we kind of, it seems like we came to a similar conclusion. The more I played in this league, and then you watch, like I said, I had Julio in a lot of leagues, and he had a ton of blown wins, a ton of them, and going, I don't have to worry about this. Like, he gave me 6-7 solid innings, got me 5-6-7 strikeouts. Ratios are okay. Let's go. It made me appreciate the pitcher's value even more, like you guys were saying, than just an arbitrary stat that sometimes, like, Julio Urias had 20 wins. 20. Like, that is insanity. Was it Brent Suter? Suter, like, had a ton of wins for Milwaukee. It's just a wild thing like that. So I'm leaning towards, I'm good with all of them. Like, I agree, whatever you prefer. But I think innings pitch is a potential interesting tweak as things continue to go that kind of rewards the better pitchers. As Chris said earlier, after like your top one or two pitchers in almost every rotation, most of these guys aren't going deep anyways because they're not that good to begin with. So it rewards the talented arms much, much more, which is very, very intriguing to me.
And it's not double counting, which to at least a certain extent wins and quality starts are. You're already being you've already got earned runs or ERA as a category. So having quality start, which is, you know, essentially the same stat with a different denominator, you know, it's you know, I like that as well because it is rewarding a different skill set than just run prevention or getting strikeouts or, you know.
I like that quite a bit. Alex, would you prefer to play in an OBP or an average league?
OBP, without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's funny because the pitcher list one, Nick tries to keep it as like as baseline as possible so it can theoretically relate to as many newcomers and as many people as possible. And there is something so incredible. Like I had Gene Segura in that league this year, and considering the amount of walks that he took, like there's just something so maddening about like, well, then that doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Like that doesn't mean anything. No one knocked him in there. He didn't score a run. He didn't obviously didn't get an RBI. And it just means nothing. And like that to me, maybe it's just because I had him and I'm biased, but it shook me to my core. Like it feels like unjust. You know what I mean? Like he did a good baseball thing. Give me a reward. Give me a serotonin boost because thing.
That's how fantasy sport, like, you know, I think about it a lot with, I don't know how much either of you guys play fantasy football, but I think about it a lot with like pass interference drawn for wide receivers, which is a legitimate skill. That like some guys, like I remember Torrey Smith was like a run of the mill producer in fantasy. He was like 800 yards on 40 catches every season. But that dude routinely had like 300 yards a season in pass interferences drawn. And, you know, he's not getting, that's a super valuable thing. It's not just the yards you would have gotten for the catch. It's 15 plus. That's a really valuable thing to do. And you get nothing for it.
And fantasy, the Baltimore Ravens offense for
that Joe Flacco for years.
Yeah, Joe Flacco was playing it up, and that was part of that offense. Yeah, and so it's you know that exists in all fantasy. It is frustrating, but I again like the wins versus inning pitch versus quality starts. There's an art to batting average. You know, there's an art to being able to figure out what skill sets are more likely to lead to good production and batting average. It's much less predictive, or much less predictable, I guess, than OBP, which you can argue makes it a worse stat for fantasy if you're trying to derive the, you know, the best skill of the players involved. And I mean the fantasy players, not the actual baseball players. But again, if there's something fun about having to figure out the annoying riddle that is batting average too.
That was my thing is like I like the idea of OBP. I think I prefer OBP for now. At the flip side of it all, it brings so many more players into the player pool that you probably would not even consider very often or a certain price point in average. And then with the new conundrum we saw this last year, which might continue on more often than we think, like regular batting average, like 240 is good now. Like so it's not like, you know, Tyler O'Neill hit 285. He probably helped you win leagues because he's like out of this world good. But you have a ton of guys with OBPs over 300. Like 300 is not good. You want the 330s, 340s. So it makes it a much different game. A much different game in that regards. I guess it could say you could weight things differently, draft them differently. But that's the conundrum I have there. So I like the idea of OBP. I think it does reward players much more. Similar to like the innings pitch gives you the total of the pitcher. Well, OBP kind of gives you the total of the player in theory. But batting average is the way it's changing the landscape of the game because guys are swinging and missing more. There's no embarrassment from striking out anymore. It makes it much more interesting to me to see how that plays out. And if you get like one or two stud average guys that could just carry you in a league where OBP for the most part, throughout our season, you know, guys are doing good and bad, but it kind of just was there
because it's very steady. Yeah.
So it's one of those categories that wasn't too changing, I guess. Alex, as the season is over, obviously, and you won this thing, what would you do differently? That it's hard to say you won. So what? Why would you do anything differently? But what would you do differently if looking back on this past season?
Maybe have more of a strategy about. I think I was a little bit too back and forth about: am I going for saves holds or am I going for like whip and ERA? Like I didn't really have an offensive strategy that was really coherent. I lucked into a lot of the leads that I got,
And then I cut bait too soon on a lot of guys. I mean, Logan Webb, I got rid of too soon. I had Jonathan India for the first like month and a half, and then he really struggled for a while. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, he's a rookie. They figured him out. They finally did it. And like, this is an unlimited IL spot league, you idiot. Like, you could have just held on to him for another couple weeks and been totally fine. So I think those are probably my two biggest. And then also, we didn't talk about this. Figure out the software, the website.
I was trying to be as nice about that as possible, but
I didn't put in. I couldn't figure out how to. I didn't have a waiver claim the first week because I just could not figure it out.
I watched Todd Zola's video at least a dozen times on like multiple screens trying to figure that thing out.
Jeff Zimmerman saw me tweet about it and called me and walked me through it. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, like. It's and but I also kind of appreciated it by the end, as frustrating as it was, because it was like, if you want to know who's done well the past 14 days, you go figure it out. Like, go to Baseball Reference, go to Fangraphs, and figure it out.
Trying to see recent stats was a nightmare. Trying to add drop, like, just because you had to go look having at one to page.
Having to remember who you wanted to add when you go to the ad page. Yeah,
that's a new one.
It was frustrating.
I liked once you put a bid in, you could add contingency bids pretty easily. That was
nice. That was good.
That was better than other softwares. But yeah,
it's also really like, from that. It's an under-discussed thing, but when people are like, "Hey, what are some tips for playing fantasy sports?" and like, figure out the system you're on, figure out your league settings, read the rules. Yeah. Like, it's basic, but that actually does give you an edge. If you if you understand your format and your settings and the place you're playing, that can give you a legitimate edge on your competition.
Big time. Yeah, no, I actually saw someone tweet the other day that said, "I didn't realize the NFBC 50s I signed up were draft and holds. They thought they were best balls and never changed their lineup the entire season." Oh my God. I was like, yeah, you got to check those things out. But the software we used, and trust me, and you guys obviously know this, we aren't the only ones that think this. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very frustrating. But again, you kind of, by the end of it, when you knew it, it was okay. A few minor tweaks would be nice, but I'm with you on that. Chris, what changes would you potentially make for next year?
As far as my approach or for
the software, that's a whole other
thing. Or, you know, settings. But for my approach, something I need to figure out, and this was true for me in a lot of my leagues, I actually ended up doing really well in pitching in a lot of my leagues, which was kind of ironic given that I was, you know, really pushing, not investing heavily in starting pitcher. And I think generally speaking, that, you know, a lot of the principles that I've learned about the zero RB approach in fantasy football also apply to starting pitcher. And I think that's, you know, there's value in that. But in this league in particular, like, I was fourth in on base percentage and I wasn't any higher than eighth in any of the other hitting categories. And this was a real problem for me, was counting stats. And I don't know if that was just a little bit of bad luck because I had a lot of injuries. I also have a tendency to target injury prone players because I think that's a way to find value. But obviously if you lose four guys in a seat, you know, at once, and you're left picking up waiver wire scraps to replace them, that's going to hurt you. Even if you can find high OBP guys, like you said, there's a lot of situations where you can find a high OBP guy, but if he's not helping you in any of the other four categories, mm-hmm. it doesn't really have that much value. So it's figuring out how to fix that issue for my teams is going to be a big thing moving forward. And then, just like I said earlier, playing the waiver wire better, being more aggressive, being, you know, Alex, you said you got rid of some guys too soon. That's always a concern, but I definitely have a tendency to not guys soon enough. And, you know, it's always so tough because if you think a guy's going to turn it around and he just sucks for 2 months and then turns it around, it's like, you were right, but you might have eaten 6 weeks of terrible stats and put yourself in a hole. That's always a really tough thing about fantasy. And I tend to fall on the wrong side of that when I'm playing.
Yeah. That's a tricky one. Like, and I echo your sentiments on the category counting categories, because I was 11th in OBP. So like I could have sacrificed OBP.
Yeah.
As having Juan Soto can do that for you, I guess. But I guess I focused so much on that. Home runs, I was dead last, and RBIs, I was second to last. And so I could have literally just said screw it on like a couple guys with just bad OBPs and just tried to get all the power in the world. Little philosophies like that I got to look at differently. Also, looking back on my draft, so many guys I thought would hit 15 to 20 homers, don't even know if they got to 10. So that just adds up in a hurry. But that'd be my biggest thing, that. And then just kind of figuring out the pitching more. Just I did okay, but it was the whole innings pitch to K thing, like figuring that out. Not being more aggressive on the wire, but not being dumb aggressive on two-pitch pitchers that you have to pitch. That's the fun one, because like I like to speculate on my two-pitch pitchers, get them cheap beforehand, and that backfired in a big way a couple times in this league. So just, again, it's the format's different. The format's fine in that regard. It's just you got to play with your hand you're dealt. But that'll be fun to see how that plays out going forward. I think we'll wrap it up there. We'll call it a day on that one. Before we head out of here, any final thoughts on the season, on anything else? Chris, I'll give you the floor first.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing that was really tough about this season was and this has been true for really three or four seasons now, is just trying to figure out what is the environment that we're playing in. Because if you remember back in April, this looked like a historic strikeout environment. It looked like we were going to be seeing league-wide rates above 25%, and the drop in bounciness of the baseball that led to fewer home runs early on, like it was shaping up to be a pretty terrible, it was like a dead ball season almost early on. And then things really changed, and we ended up, I think, with the lowest K percentage it was lower than 2020, right in line with 2019. So it's interesting how that ended up working out, and trying to figure out what's the baseball going to look like next season and who's going to be impacted. There are a handful of players like Kevin Biggio and DJ LeMahieu who I faded and ended up working out really well for me. But, you know, that's just a constant puzzle, and it really makes things even more difficult. And that's one of the things that really stood out to me this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Any final thoughts, Alex?
Let's hope our March is filled with drafts and not arguments about the CBA.
100%.
I don't even want to think about that. Yeah. I can't. I just can't. It really, it's very frustrating for.
I try every show not to mention it, and I slip up at least once with Toby, and Toby gives me a look every time. So I'm like, I try not to. I'm just like,
And
we used up a lot of counter programming during
I don't know what I'll do
the pandemic. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if we can do like drafting fictional fantasy baseball lineups.
Well, Chris, again. I told you last time we'll have to come back on and talk like Marvel and stuff. So maybe we'll have to do an episode on that.
Let's do it.
Hopefully you don't even need to do it, but also pay attention to what those theoretical CBA changes are, but don't, in my opinion, don't overestimate their impacts, right? I mean, I think we kind of saw this with the sticky stuff. There was clearly a change, right? I think that change tapered off over time. Garrett Cole's fastball gained another 100 RPM after the substance. I really echo their concerns that it wasn't the fact that it was going away. It was the fact that it was going away now and suddenly with no time for them to really adjust to what they were doing. So if that, pay attention to what happens. I still personally believe that they can come to an agreement where some mix of rosin and sunscreen will be fine, because it seemed like everyone actually was fine with that, hitters and batters included. The problem really seemed to be like, oh, we have an astrophysicist who came in and there was a meteor that fell and the Dodgers found it and now they're using it on their hands. That was like the biggest problem. But with that said, with a full off season, I think these guys are going to be able to figure out what they need to do to be as effective as they can be with their arsenal. So we tend to, myself included, get very excited about potential changes and what they could mean. They are often not moving the needle as much as we think they are.
That's the hardest part about this gig is we are still just trying to predict the future. So if anybody else can figure that one out, like knock yourself out.
To a certain extent, it's the blind leading the blind.
Yes,
100%.
Exactly. So we just have a platform sometimes. That's pretty much all it is. But we'll wrap it up there. I want to thank you guys for joining me. It's always fun chatting with you guys, and we'll have to do it again sometime. But for now, make sure you guys check out Chris on Twitter at CTowerCBS and all his great work at CBS Sports, and check out Fantasy Sports, and go check out Alex Fast on Twitter at AlexFast8, PitcherList.com, ESPN. Who knows where he's at next, but he's always doing something. But again, guys, thanks for joining me. I truly appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 406. Catch you guys later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.